Welcome to Baseball Chaos. Today's an exciting day because Ichiro has been inducted into the Hall of Fame. We're going to get into a little bit deeper with one of our Mariner experts for a long time in Seattle. Let's get into it. Joining me is Jason Puckey. You guys have seen him before on the channel. He's PuckSports.com. Go check him out, or at PuckSports on X or Twitter, whichever way you like to call it. He's interviewed quite a few people, and today he talked, I believe, to Larry Stone, had a pretty good interview as well, talking about Ichiro's induction and all the stories as he was covered through the years. So, Jason, welcome back. Appreciate you coming on.
I appreciate you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say, just because of being a Mariner fan, we are always bitter, right? We always have something we got to gripe about. This is just us as Mariner fans. Who's the one?
My guess, the one person that left him off. Yeah. My guess is probably, you know, it's probably somebody from New York. That would be my first guess, just because I think the rationale probably is, if someone's going to not have Derek Jeter be unanimous, then Ichiro can't be unanimous. I mean, I knew this was going to happen. I didn't know.
You said 1-3, so you did call it. I'll give you that.
I mean, it just was going to be with somebody. Somebody's going to do it. There's every year. There's just someone that wants to prove some point to themselves or to the rest of the world or baseball. And it's foolish. I wish the person would come clean. I mean, if you feel that way, stand up. Tell everyone. You know, tell everyone how you feel. No one's going to agree with you. So the person's never going to come to light. Just like the three people, I think it was three for Griffey. I mean, you know, they never revealed themselves, so I doubt this person will ever reveal themselves.
Well, I think it'd be more appropriate if they were to open up to the world and say, like, look, I didn't vote for them, and this is the reason why. And clearly, if they don't show themselves to me, just like you're saying, they don't have a valid reason. It's just spite.
And it shouldn't take away from him getting in. I mean, he's still, I think it's the second highest, right?
Oh, he's the most. No, he's the highest. Well, we're talking about this ballot?
No, I'm just talking about just overall. He's going to be second behind Rivera. So it shouldn't cheat. We shouldn't care, but I think there's a little bit of pride, I think, as a Mariners fan, is that you wanted the first position player to ever go in with a unanimous vote to be one of your own. I think it'd be really cool. So my guess is whoever it was, maybe he was a Mariner, and maybe it's if Babe Ruth wasn't unanimous, and Hank Aaron and Willie Mays. By the way, all those guys should have been unanimous.
Should have been, yeah.
You know, it's not. I think it's not hard. I think we really overcomplicate the Hall of Fame. And here's the Hall of Fame. Here's how it goes. I give you a name. I snap my finger. You say yes or no. That's it. Yeah. And if it's yes right away, then you vote for him. I mean, I know there's people that hem and haw, and well, you spend a couple of years on the ballot, and if everyone did it that way, then, you know, maybe Edgar's never going to be, you know, in the Hall of Fame. But, you know, if he would have asked me and asked most people in baseball the first time he was available, I mean, I would have said he was in the Hall of Fame. So it's a tradition unlike any other, is that there's someone that's always going to do this. But, you know, the fact that he got that many votes and fell one short, it's still going to be an awesome ceremony in the summer. It's going to be chaotic with all the Japanese media there. It's going to be insane.
Yes.
And it's well-deserved.
Very, very well-deserved. I mean, this is one of the posts that MLB posted for him. I mean, as Mariner fans, we all know, 2001 rookie year, rookie of the year, MVP, 10-time All-Stars. You can see here, 10 gold gloves, 3 silver sluggers, 2 batting titles, and one of 33 ever to have 3,000 hits. And now he's a Hall of Famer. The accolades alone, to me, tell me that it should have been unanimous. But I understand, I guess, if there's a bunch of other people that didn't get unanimous votes. But it's hard to argue, given the amount of time he spent in the MLB, the amount of time that he spent in the MPB, the fact that he came over to the U.S. to play in the MLB at age 27, which is like, if someone's rookie of the year is at age 27, most likely they're not going to have a very fulfilling, you know, career. Like, they've been struggling to make it to the bigs. He spent 9 years in the MPB, and I believe his career batting average was like 360 or something, or no, maybe it was his final season there was like 380, but he had over 300 batting average in MPB, and he comes over here and does all this. And then on top of that, in 2004, he holds the record for most hits in a single season. So it's hard for me to see why it wasn't unanimous, but you know, maybe I'm just being biased, but looking back at what he's done, the fact that you hold a record for something, it's like, I guess if Aaron Judge continues to produce like he does, if he can improve his defense a little bit, maybe we can forget about that drop ball. Like 10 years from now, if he's able to sustain this or continue or maybe slightly decline, like that would be someone you can argue should be unanimous because they hold a record for most home runs in a season for the AL. So maybe that's something that holds value. I'm just being biased though, because I'm a Mariners fan, but it's like, what else did he need to do? You know,
I mean, there's like nothing else. There's nothing else he needed to do. It's just that there's, you know, it's
the politics.
It's just one of those things that, you know, voters, they mm-hmm. have their different requirements and they have their biases and whatever that is. And I think market plays a factor into it. I mean, again, just go back to, you know, the last two guys that, well, not lie. I mean, Griffey was before Edgar, but I mean, the fact that, you know, there was three people that didn't vote for him. The fact that there was, I think it's two for Jeter. I can't remember how many people.
I'm not sure, but the fact that he didn't.
Derek Jeter is not a unanimous. I mean, it's just ridiculous, but it's just a culture of baseball writers, unfortunately, and the people that vote. It has always been there, and they feel above the game in a way, and they feel like they're the gatekeepers of a game, and there is this idea for some that they have to wait their time. But hey, he has accomplished something that many people never thought he would do. He came over here again, you know, now the rules are different, but he would have been able to come over earlier back then. But the mm-hmm. fact that they had to wait, you know, until he was 27 to come over here, what he accomplished in the 3,000 hits, the 10-time, you know, Gold Glove, the 10-time All-Star, to be one of four players, you know, to accomplish the 3,000 hits and 500 stolen bases, his defense. And then on top of that, none of, you know, there are, you know, besides Jackie Robinson, from a cultural standpoint, no one had more pressure on him in the history of the sport to deliver, because he was the first Japanese player to come over here. Position player.
Yeah.
And position player to come over here. And there have been pitchers before, but the knock was always that, yes, maybe Japanese players can pitch, but they can't play in the field. They can't hit. The game's different. They'll be overmatched.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the weight of an entire country on his shoulders, a culture on his shoulders. And that if he failed, he didn't just fail himself. He failed his country. He failed his culture. And, you know, he talked about that first year where it was, you know, he was sick because of the amount of pressure and how much pressure he put on himself in that first year just to deliver. And he did so in, you know, spectacular fashion, winning the Rookie of the Year and winning the MVP and, you know, leading a team to 116 wins. And it just was, you know, and I think people forget that. I think you forget what, because we've had so many Japanese players come over since, and because Shohei Ohtani has been a superstar for the second he walked into the league. I mean, this guy was the biggest thing in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if him and Shohei walked into the same room together. I don't know who gets the bigger ovation. I mean, everyone I think now would probably say Ohtani, but I don't know if that's the case really with him.
There's a lot of fans that weren't around.
Yeah. He's that revered in Japan. So he not only did, you know, got in. It's not only Ichiro going to the Hall of Fame this summer. It's, you know, he's taking all of Japanese baseball with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a, it's you're not gonna like me hearing or like me saying this, but we are a generation away from back when Ichiro was in the league and playing. So when we have people that might give their opinion of not exactly Hall of Fame statute, but if you're looking at comparing Shohei to Ichiro and what they can accomplish, what they can do, who's better, who's going to get that standing ovation that you're talking about, like there's 20-year-olds now that never saw him break that record, that never saw him win that AL or the AL Rookie of the Year and the MVP. You know, there's some people that are now interested in the sport that argue with us on X and Twitter or whatever. and they never even saw him play. Like, it's been that much of a gap in change of time. But if they were to be at their peak at the same time, yeah, it's very arguable. And at the same time, the game's changed. It's not as linear with MPB, where MPB is very contact focused. You know, they're looking at hitting the ball, getting on base, putting in play, where the US MLB is power this, power that, power speed, power speed, power speed. Like, we're so heavily focused on going to hit the 50-50, the 40-40, the 40-70, you know, that combination that's been kind of taking over baseball the last few years, where you look at Luis Arraez, he wins a batting title for the highest average, and people are like, yeah, but he sucks everywhere else. Who cares about his batting average? Which is, to me, is surprising, because I still think a high batting average, I don't care if you walk a lot, it means you're putting the ball in play and you're getting hits. And that's productive for a team. And I think that translated heavily for the 2001 Mariners. Their team was a very high batting average team with only two or three guys that were in the double digits with home runs. And they got 116 wins. So I still think there's a lot of value there, but we've gotten so removed from that philosophy that we don't look as high on those who weren't just hitting bombs all the time. And yet we still don't even acknowledge, I know some people do, but in the Hall of Fame wise, we don't acknowledge, because 10 consecutive years, we didn't vote for Barry Bonds, the home run king, I would say, into the Hall of Fame because of his PEDs. But we still have A-Rod, and he's getting voted in higher than Felix Hernandez, which I feel like is like, what are we doing? Like, are we not going to stay? What's the word I'm looking for?
Consistent, maybe.
Consistent. I mean, yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think people have their own feelings about, you know, the steroid users and the PED users. I mean, just to go back to just Ichiro and Ohtani, I guess my point is this. My point is not who the better player is. I mean, I think, you know, time will tell, and I think maybe time has already told us this. But listen, I think Ohtani is on the path to becoming a better baseball player than Ichiro. I just think that the combination of the size, the power, the pitching, mm-hmm. I mean, he's a better player.
Yeah.
And at least I was fortunate to be able to watch both. I'm saying from a cultural standpoint, the first to do it is always going to be more revered than the ones that came after. And I'm saying, if they walked into the same room, and that's my point with him in back in Japan, why this is such a big deal. If they walked into the same room together, I think Ichiro is going to be more revered and just have a bigger ovation than Shohei Ohtani. I mean, you see when they first met, I mean, it's like these Japanese players who come up, it's like meeting the Pope. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a folklore. I mean, he's like a story time figure.
He's a legend.
That you would tell, you know, your kids. And so, you know, when you're the first is always going to be looked at differently. Mm-hmm. And so he will always have a special place, I think, in Japanese baseball and then in Major League Baseball. But, you know, in terms of, I mean, the style of play is different. I mean, it's funny now. I mean, the way that he played is, you know, back then is now the style of play that most people want to see now. I mean, under these rules, you know, the 56, 57 stolen bases he had his rookie year, I mean, he'd double that. I mean, with these new rules in baseball, I mean, it would be insane what he'd be able to do. I mean, he played the sport in a unique fashion that has never been played ever again. I mean, no one plays like him. To this day, no one plays like him. No one swings like him. No one has the mannerisms like him. And he's uniquely Ichiro, and it's not only just a combination of the his hitting ability. He's an elite defender. I mean, he was just I think sometimes people get lost in the hits and the 3,000 plus hits, the 4,000 plus hits, and all that, and the 262 hits. This guy is, his most signature play ever as a baseball player is a throw from right field in Oakland to nail Terrence Long. That is his signature play,
like Star Wars.
Yeah, so it's you know, he was an all around baseball player, and you know, I think if he were playing today, he would change probably how you play. I mean, I think that I don't have the stats in front of me. I don't know what his home run high was, but he's a guy who probably hit 25, 30 home runs if he played in today's game, because it's a different game now. And he would adjust to that. He would play he would adjust to the way that the game is being played right now, probably to a degree. And you know, I had years to be able to sit there, and I started covering the team in 03, and I had the pleasure to sit there and watch, you know, him in batting practice. And those stories are true. I mean, he would just hit one out all the time. He would display power that was on par with the best players in baseball. And if
I do true.
I just truly believe if he wanted to do it, he could have it, mm-hmm. but it would have been at the cost of a batting average and getting more hits, and that's what he valued more than anything.
So 2005 was the year he hit the most home runs in a single season for his career, and that was only 15.
I was going to say, yeah, 15. That's what
15, but he also had the most triples that year with 12. Yeah. His batting average was still 303.
Yeah. I mean, my only regret with him is after his rookie season, he stopped running as much.
Mm.
And you know, I just still think he could have been a guy that should have always been, you know, is one of the leaders and really kind of the upper echelon of base stealers. He kind of stopped after that rookie year a little bit. And I don't know, maybe his age, he slowed down a little bit. I don't know. But he kind of pulled the brakes on it after his first season in baseball. But, I mean,
he picked it back up in 2006, actually, quite a bit. He went from...
What did he have in 06?
Like you were saying. So 2001, he had the 56 stolen bases, which was the most. 2002 to 2005, he was low 30s pretty much the entire time. And then 2006, he bumped back up to 45.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he should have been consistently in the 50s.
Yeah.
I mean, he had that speed. But I don't know, for whatever reason, he kind of halted that a little bit. But I don't know. That's the only...
He was 28.
Only knock yeah. that I can think of. And I mean, you know, and then he just has a it's interesting how a lot of fans look at him. I don't know, you know, with Ichiro how beloved. I mean, I think he's beloved. He clearly is.
Oh yeah.
But I think if you ask Mariner fans when you start ranking him, I don't know where he would rank. I mean, I know he would, you know, most people would say he's the second best player that the franchise has ever seen. Some would maybe say third, because I bet you there'd be some people that feel A-Rod in his limited time there was better than him. But in terms of like beloved figures, I don't, you know, he's behind Griffey, he's behind Edgar, he's behind Felix, he's for some behind Randy, maybe some behind Buehner. You know, and it's that connection. I know that was the one thing I think in his career, and if he ever has a regret, is just not making that connection more a little bit with fans in his career, but. Yeah, it's also kind of part of the culture. It's pretty private, a pretty private culture. And so, you know, it wasn't until like he was inducted in the Mariners Hall of Fame, you know, he came out for the first time, spoke English, which his English was great. Always was.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that he had a great sense of humor and a personality. And I think it would have been fun if more fans early on in his tenure, especially when the team was bad, you know, because it went bad real quick, you know, 01 and then 02. They were good 03. They were fine, 90 games, missed the playoffs, and then it just fell off.
Yeah.
And, you know, the rest of his Mariners career, they weren't good.
Yeah. Yeah, they were. Yeah, it's interesting how we got these spikes every once in a while with these players. And we, for the most part, we get excited and then we hang on to that for a very long time. But I wanted to circle back on what you're saying, like that connection with fans. I think it's... I think it's a lot. Sorry, my dogs.
It's okay. We all got dogs. Nothing wrong with dogs barking.
We he started in 2001, and then he left Seattle right around. I guess he was in two. I don't know why there's two teams. Oh yeah, so he left in 2012, which would be when I graduated high school. Sure. So, in that time span of 11 years or so, like that's a lot of my childhood, you know? So for me, I feel he is the image. He is the one that I remember the clearest. And I see him as like a number one or number two. I mean, Griffey obviously is hard to compare against for what he accomplished in the years he was there. Putting Felix ahead of him, because that was pretty much the same time frame for the most part. Yes, I see him as like a statue for the Mariners on the pitching side, but I find it hard to compare players as far as like a team Hall of Fame bracket with pitchers and position players, because I feel like they kind of take care of two different things. Of course, we bring up Shohei and he's doing both, but majority of the players you look at, it's hard to compare them. I've personally put them in two different sections just because they're doing completely different things. But I will give Felix Hernandez a hand. He did hit a grand slam against the Mets, so he can hit, I guess. But
I think for Felix though, and I think where I think some fans would gravitate a little bit more towards Felix is because he was an open book.
Yeah.
I mean, he showed his emotions. He was an open book of how he felt about the city and the fans and, you know, accountability, you know, every wins and losses. He was always the first one there. And I just think it's a little bit different, but you know, that does shouldn't.
Personality wise and engagement with the fan base.
There's a lot to that, but you know, Ichiro was just that wasn't him. And I guess, I'm asking him to be somebody that he probably in a public eye just wasn't comfortable to be, but certainly behind the scenes, you know, with his teammates. I mean, he was again, prankster, fun guy, someone who, dedicated to his craft and dedicated to being a great teammate. And he certainly was all those things.
Yeah, for sure. And then, I mean, this year around, there's two others that were inducted to the Hall of Fame today. So Billy Wagner, I think very deserving for relief pitcher. It's you don't get a lot of relief pitchers. I know we mentioned Mariano Rivera being the only unanimous one. So I guess that takes away from what I'm trying to convey here. But career 2.31 ERA, 422 saves, 903 innings pitched. His whip was a 0.998. So very deserving. I'm glad he was able to make it in. I don't know. Is this his first year on the ballot or no? I can't remember.
For who?
For Billy Wagner.
This was his last year.
This was the last year to make it on?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, he's been passed up quite a bit. It's good to see that he made it this time because he's very much deserving. There's not very many pitchers out there, relief pitchers out there that I think put up the numbers that he was able to put up consistently over the course of their entire career and pitch as long as he did. I mean, he was in from 95 to 2010. So again, a generation difference that people don't really look back on and see much anymore. But his numbers were just incredible.
Yeah, but this is my problem with the Hall of Fame. I mean, he was a Hall of Famer in the first year, and he was a Hall of Famer in his second year, in his third year, in his fourth year, in his fifth year. The fact that he had to, I mean, his numbers just, I mean, again, you know, a reliever closer is part of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just is. It's a position. It's, you know, it's, I don't know how many, I'm trying to think of how many kickers and punters are in the Hall of Fame for the NFL, but it's very few. And I don't understand why. I mean, they're part of football. They're a position. There are people there that are the best at what they did at that position. Billy Wagner was one of the best to ever do it at his position. He shouldn't have had to wait until his 10th year to get in. But again, it's just like it's this weird contest that these guys have where they feel that they've just got to make people wait their turn for some reason, and you know, and Wagner was certainly one of them. But I mean, it's an odd. I'll never understand it. But
so I have a question for you following up on that, like in a minute. I guess just for props, CC Sabathia. He's the one who got inducted as well. He's the third one to have enough votes to get in. I think well-deserving, long career, did well. I mean, he had his moments where he didn't perform as great, but he bounced back multiple times and a very long career, 2001 to 2019. So 18 years, pretty long. So I mean, good for him because 62.3 WAR. He had a 3.74 career ERA. So 3,093 strikeouts over the course of his career. Hard to get to, but he did it. Of course, he ended his career with the Yankees, but he is pretty memorable for his time with Cleveland and then also the Brewers. So I'm glad he made it. I still feel like Felix should have been a little bit higher up. Although after Billy Wagner, he fell right behind Andy Pettit, who is also another future Hall of Famer. I think he's got to get in at some point. I don't know how many more years he has left to be eligible for the ballot, but they're pretty neck and neck. 27.9% for Andy, and for Felix, it was 20.6. So close race, and we'll see next year, but they have quite a few people ahead of them. Manny Ramirez, Alex Rodriguez, Chase Utley, Andrew Jones, and Carlos Beltran. So we'll see, and then more just get added next year. Do you have any idea or like a any sort of like creative replacement for the way the Hall of Fame is voted in, given that it is so much like this? It's just so random, and it doesn't seem to coordinate with their career stats or their how their peak was and how for how many years and what they accomplished. It's more just subjective among reporters and writers. Do you see another way of making this voting more, I guess, relatable to the fans that were there to watch them?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you get more player involvement into it. I mean, it is the Baseball Writers Hall of Fame, so I just think that it's, you just, I think having every vote, I mean, well, it, I'm trying to think, if you want everything to be public, and we just talked about it, we want to know who the one person is.
Who the one guy is, yeah.
But, you know, here in this day and age, let's be honest, in this day and age, I mean, this guy's going to get, this person's going to get death threats, this person's going to be harassed, and, you know, that there's nothing good about that. So, yeah.
Well, if Mitch Garver's getting death threats or being told to kill himself because he's not performing,
yeah, what are they going to do? I don't know what they could do. I just think you want, you know, people that, you know, I think people have got to have their cards who are, you know, actively covering the sport and being involved in the sport. And you know, I don't know what the solutions are to it.
What if it's like a two-vote system? Like, we vote for all-stars, right?
Sure.
Like, what if it's this combined with fans' votes, and then there's some sort of algorithm there?
I don't know if fans – I don't know if I would involve fans, but no? I would involve maybe the Hall of Fame, people that are in the Hall of Fame.
People themselves. In the Hall of Fame. Okay.
They know what a Hall of Famer looks like.
Or the players themselves, like they actually – like active
roster players. That's what I'm saying, the players that are in the Hall of Fame.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, besides them, like active players now.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably would just have – yeah, maybe the – I would just have the people that are in the Hall of Fame.
Okay,
maybe be a part of the voting.
They can. It's you can select who's going to join you and your crew, kind of deal.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that makes sense to me. Yeah, I just feel like there needs to be a little bit more. I think that's a great idea. I don't know why they don't do that. Allow them to, because I bet you most of them still watch the game. They see the players that are developing. Sure. A lot of them are analysts now. They're going on MLB Network and talking about these guys, and they're pretty involved themselves. And yeah, I just would love it to be, you know, whoever deserves it, but then also consistency. If Barry Bonds is not in it because of PEDs, A-Rod shouldn't. And I'm not against A-Rod. It's not like I hate the guy or anything like that, but I just like fairness. I like consistency here. If A-Rod's going to be in it, then Barry Bonds deserves to be considered. I understand he wasn't voted in 10 consecutive years in a row, but I think mindsets are changing right now. I mean, there's a lot of people.
I mean, I don't think A-Rod's going to ever get in. He's at 37%. Like, he's
37%, but the drop-off goes from 66 to 39 and then him. So yeah, he's number four.
Yeah, but it's just, I still think that I just don't think he'll ever get in. I don't think there's a chance.
I'm surprised that he got 37.
How many years has been on the ballot?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure at this point how many years or how many years he has left.
I mean, I'll look it up, but I don't think, I'm just trying to think how many years Yeah, I mean, even though that he got that number now, it doesn't. I mean, the stuff can always fluctuate. I mean, you have to make a bigger jump, in terms of, you know, year to year. So I mean, maybe if people are. I do think people are changing their minds on these people, but I do think there's going to be a lot of players that a lot of voters they'll never change their stance on this one. Never will.
Yeah. And, well, that was very evident. Whoever that one was, they didn't change their opinion at all, clearly. So I don't want to harp, I guess, too much on that, but, speaking of the Mariners, because sure. I have you here, and you got to get off soon. So I'll try to make this quick. I just want to run this idea by you. Do you possibly think that looking at this, as they pull it up here, this is the 2025 projected as is right now Mariners roster, starting lineup from Fangraphs. I trust them. They're relatively accurate most of the time, including their bench. If I go over to WRC Plus, do you think that the front office is looking at this and is like, this is a good team. We're good. We only have two players that are below 100 WRC plus. We're good. I know they're probably looking at more, but is this like some sort of weird smoke screen that they don't have to go out and look at Pete Alonso? They don't have to go out and look at Jack Flaherty. They don't have to go out and look at Alex Bregman. Besides the money thing, if they needed to make a splash somewhere or go and get Arenado, is the smoke screen here because the numbers look good enough? Or
I mean, listen, I love all the new numbers in baseball. I really do. And I think it's all great information. I think we get paralyzed by it all, including organizations.
Yeah.
And I mean, we overcomplicate the sport a lot. And sometimes average and on base and how many runs you score and how many runs you drive in are kind of good stats. You know, I know what their WRC plus numbers are and they're great. And I mean, most of them are pretty good, but I'm just not going to be married to WRC plus. I mean, it's the proof is what did they do last year? They have not improved their baseball team on the field one iota, not at all.
Yeah.
And we are, as we record this, 3 weeks away from the start of spring training. They have failed another offseason where they have promised people that they were going to be in this championship window, and they've failed again. And it's every year it's the same story with them, with ownership, that no, money's not a problem. We've got the money to spend. This will be the year we hit the free agent market. They've said that for three straight years. And for three straight years, they've done nothing.
Well, until this year, they said that free agency is not a good strategy.
Yeah, but, you know, they have set an artificial cap to themselves. There is no salary cap in baseball.
No,
but
yeah.
They have given themselves a cap.
Yeah.
Because they want to be profitable to a point where they don't want to overspend, where they actually lose money, but yet they don't. Sometimes I wonder if they understand business over there. They don't understand that sometimes to make money, you have to spend money. And they don't seem to understand that. Now, I mean, I don't know if this is just solely an ownership thing. Is it a front office thing? I don't know. I mean, I tend to put more blame on the ownership for not spending.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if does Jerry DePoto not want to spend money? Does he feel like it's cheating to sign free agents? I have no idea. But
I mean,
what they're doing now is not building a championship baseball team. They've got a championship staff, and it's cheap. It's cheap. I mean, my God, their best players except Julio are cheap. Cal Raleigh's cheap. Mm-hmm. All their pitchers are cheap. And they, you know, their answer this offseason so far has been, you know, Donovan Solano. I mean, it's embarrassing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I kind of have a theory of the fact that as long as we are contending to possibly make the playoffs, and it'll drive in money. And because of that, they're just going to continue the same philosophy as always, which is that 44%, honestly, 54%. So it's like a revolving door, and there's nothing really you can do about it. But at the same time, I'm starting, and don't get me wrong, I'm starting to actually begin to become a fan of the Dodgers. I hate the Dodgers because what they're doing is kind of proving a point. Them and the Diamondbacks, they're spending money on big name players, and they're showing the rest of the world how much money they have coming in because of it. Like, their returns are significantly higher than what they're paying out to players. Even those figures are mind-blowing or record-breaking for 1 year, and then the Mets go ahead and jump ahead. But besides that, they're spending so much money. People are like, oh my God, we need a salary cap. No, we don't need a salary cap. We need this to kick the asses of all the ownerships that are not willing to dime up because they're comfortable with the profits that they have. They don't want to risk anything and lose any of those profits. So I'll leave it at that. I know you got to go, but I'm starting to like what the Dodgers are doing because I'm hoping that my theory is correct, that this is going to cause issues for cheap ownerships in the future.
I hope you're right. I'd love to see them spend more. It'd be great. It'd be great. They owe it to the fan base to spend more. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they owe it to you because you've been reporting on the Mariners for too long, and they haven't given you nearly jack shit. So you deserve
it. I just want it for the fan base. That's all I want it for. I want it for the fan base desperately.
All right. Well, hey, Jason, thank you again for coming on. I know I ran past the time, so I appreciate it. And anytime you want to come on, I'll shoot you an invite, and I love talking with you.
Sounds good. I appreciate you. Anytime. Awesome.
Thank you.